Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak livery, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. It is the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. And excited as always to be with you, Paul Weiner Jr. and Jim Osarski from Cincinnati.com. Cincinnati Inquirer. What is up, Jim?
Not much, Paul. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm excellent. Life is good. Refreshed off a little weekend in the Big Easy. That city just never disappoints. Even incredibly hungover and still slightly disheveled from Mardi Gras, the city as a whole was still on point all weekend. It was like 75 to 80 degrees the whole time. They were hitting record highs. Meanwhile, snow was coming down back in Cincinnati. So I was a happy camper because that's all that really matters. It's the differential between temperature and happiness in one place versus the one that you left. So I was
right.
I was only sad it wasn't a complete blizzard back home. I wanted it to be really awful to complete the trip, but it was a good trip. And a great weekend, so I'm feeling good. I'm feeling refreshed. Although I don't have like a new puppy to hang out with like you do, so I'm a little jealous. Congratulations on your family's latest tiny furry addition.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, we adopted it's always the Labrador Retriever mix from the Humane Society. So we won't really know what she is until I don't know, 6 months from now.
Right. Yes.
Right. I think we had one Labrador Retriever mix in the family that turned out to be like a Ridgeback. And then we had one Labrador Retriever mix that did have some lab, but was really more of a Golden. So, yeah, we'll see. It's she is not named after a TV character, however.
Which is a misstep on your part.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and it is a female, so your idea of naming her Marvin Lewis did not – go over.
No,
I personally enjoyed the idea of naming a dog Marvin Lewis,
yeah.
And that's like the name. Like you don't call it Marv,
no,
or Marvin,
no,
like
Marvin
it's
Lewis.
Marvin Lewis,
yeah,
is the name.
And it's because that's what you want because you want it to be around for 16 years. You know,
exactly.
It's a great.
Exactly.
I mean, dogs. Yeah, that's about the age that dogs live to be. It just seemed to be a you know, it's an ideal outcome.
Right. So as everyone knows, I'm clearly Polish. My wife is Polish, so we went with the Polish name Zosia.
Yeah.
Which is Polish for Sophia. So we are so we will see and maybe she will make podcast appearances like Uncle Phil as she grows up into her voice.
Yeah. Phil's made many appearances in the background of this podcast. So maybe we'll catch one. Maybe we'll catch one today. I don't know. We'll see. But anyways, now we know there's the threat of two dogs making appearances on the BBP. So we'll keep an eye out for that. Good weekend had by all. But now it's on to Bengals stuff because the Bengals had a out of the ordinary
kind of busy week for this time of year. One we knew of, the second we didn't know was going to happen. So that was, we finally heard the outcome of the never ending AJ McCarron fiasco. The grievance finally was settled, came down Thursday, and AJ McCarron is no longer a Bengal. He won his grievance. He hits now as an unrestricted free agent, and that means, as we've told you many times, he will not be back with the Bengals again. He will be going elsewhere and trying to find a place to compete and play. Like we told you the whole time, these things have tended to favor the player, but both sides were confident in their side, in how they felt. It was a coin flip, and that ended up being the way it turned out.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, these, I'm sure as time goes on, Paul, like, details will leak out, or AJ might just say, because he's never shy, like, why the arbitrator ruled the way he did. But if people went and read our sort of primer on this last week, what made this a coin flip, at least, and what really maybe tipped the scales in AJ's favor was this leeway the arbitrator had to decide that the Bengals' error wasn't in the NFI designation, but it was in keeping him on it until late November.
Yeah.
But that really wasn't what the grievance was about. The grievance was about the wrong listing of the NFI, but he had this leeway. The club wasn't entirely confident or comfortable with him having that leeway, clearly. But I honestly think that's what flipped this for AJ, was whatever video, whatever proof he had to say, hey, I was ready after the 6 weeks or after the 8 weeks, and they just stashed me. I think – I don't know, Paul, but that's my gut. That's how I feel he won, because it was pretty clear he was hurt coming out of Alabama.
Yeah.
It's a summary.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, it's often about the spirit of the rule in these situations. And I think the spirit of the rule is not to use your designation to stash a player and steal away an accrued year because of your decision that, you know, that it was against the spirit of what all the rules are. So I think that plays a part of it. That's what happens when you bring in these independent people, you get a lot of that. So regardless of what happened, you know, the Bengals, of course, are not facing any sort of discipline for what they did. I think both sides are happy to have some clarity as to how that all works now a little bit better, or how, you know, I think – with both sides being so confident about the way they felt, I think there was also a thought of solution going forward for everyone would come out of this. Right. And I think that's the way it's turned out. So everybody sort of moves forward. I mean, I think there was a thought out there, people saying, oh, of course the Bengals got caught trying to be greedy and skate the rules. I don't think so. I think they legitimately thought they were doing everything properly and listing everybody properly by the book and going by that. And the fact that it took as long as it did and went as far as it did, I think shows you that you know, there's some gray area in all of it that probably needed to be cleared out. But so no, yeah, there's no any, you know, penalty for the team and never was there any animosity between the two sides. This was just about exhausting every avenue you could if you were AJ McCarron to play. So now he will. The question is where.
Yeah, right. And let's revisit something here quickly, Paul, because again, you know, despite and thank everyone who listens to BBP, over a million of you have, you know, in just the last year, I guess, yep. Right? And anyone who's read our stuff, but it does not everyone sees everything. So again, the Bengals didn't turn down trade offers or. Price, and now you could argue they priced him too high, but for a guy that they felt was valuable, and they thought they had control of him through this offseason, they probably would have played it a little differently, Paul, maybe if they knew he was up this year. But you can't operate in the what ifs, like he was an unrestricted or a restricted free agent, excuse me. And they did trade him. It's just the other team messed it up. So I, you know, and I understand it's out there. I know people have said the Vikings called a couple years ago. Yes, they called. There was no offer. There was no offer turned down. How many times I got to say this? But so that's part of this. And it's not our job to defend the team, but I mean, facts are facts. And yes, maybe the Bengals in hindsight should have prepared for this. But to me, they did by trading him on October 31st.
Yeah, it's well, just, I think that they had their price put out there the whole time. Now, I could say – I would say maybe on October 31st or in the days prior to that, perhaps they should have moved on the need for a three, right, as well. And if that's what was that's holding the Browns up, you had to look into the future. But at that point in time, I think they still were holding out hope for this season. And that meant there's still value for them in having the insurance of AJ McCarron being around. And so that's part of it too, but and they thought perhaps they also would have this restricted year. So why budge? But if you also had to see the possibility that all you were going to get would be the comp pick. And so if you could get the two and make it maybe a 2 and a 4 or 2 and a 5, maybe back off that a little bit, whatever you were willing to do to help get that Cleveland deal done and get you that 2, you know, and get it now, and because you're in a point with your franchise where you're having to rebuild a little bit more than you thought you were going to on the fly right now because of what's happened the last 2 years, you would just be a lot happier there. And you know, and you know, we know how Mike Brown is with these things. You dig in and you say, this is our price, and you don't move. And I think the Bengals took that stance the entire time. I think perhaps a little more flexibility at this particular trade deadline, when you clearly had a Browns team that on the hook, right? They were calling, they were interested. But it all just sort of hung out there, where perhaps moving down to get it done. And yet at the end, they would have been proven right. It could have, should have been done, depending on how you look at it. That would be honestly the biggest tweak in this from a Bengals perspective is I think you would have wanted to try to cash in on that 2 this year if you could have gotten it. And I think you could have gotten it at the trade deadline or perhaps earlier in the year.
Yeah. I guess hindsight's 20/20, but you're right. Like, you knew the grievance was on the table. Therefore you had a 50% chance of losing. So how do you get proper value? You know, because on their perspective, they have to assume they're winning. I mean, because he was put on NFI to begin with. They were given an extension to begin with. There was no reason for them to think they would lose. I mean, you know, but you're right. I guess for me, Paul, I'm stammering because I just feel like if you feel if you have a value on a player, you know, there's always precedent, right? Like, what if – now let's spin it forward. You know, let's say Jeff Driskel comes out and has the preseason McCarron did in 14 or in 15, excuse me, and just is amazing, right? He's this great athlete. And, you know, let's say he has to play for whatever reason. You're back in this boat again. And, oh, by the way, just last year you shortchanged yourself. Like, you were asking for a 2 and a 3, but then you just took a 3 or 2.
You know what I mean? You've set a precedent in every single negotiation you're ever in that this is my price and I'm not moving off of it. And that's it's a negotiation tactic and one that has paid off, in a huge way for this franchise in the past when you go back to Carson Palmer or other deals that they've made and the way that they negotiate all their contracts as well. Where, you know, you don't see them signing bad deals. They don't do it. And I think that speaks back to what we were just talking about, which is a great point. But anyway, let's go through. I'm curious where you think McCarron lands. And I do want to get to that. But let's bring in you were you spoke with AJ after it came out, so I do want to bring in the audio with your conversation with AJ and his reaction to the news and where he goes forward and all of that stuff. So here's Jim on the phone with AJ McCarron after the news broke last week.
It's just like a it's just it's just awesome. Just to be free so I can just hopefully get my opportunity to go compete somewhere, and I'm just super excited.
So I guess I'll start there, man. You've been, for the better part of 2 years, that's all you've said is, I just want a chance. So as you're processing this, man, what is that? Now someone will give that to you and you can pick that someone, right?
Yeah.
Or some team.
Yeah. It's just, it's just a blessing, and I was going to be blessed either way because you're still in the league, you're still being able to, play the game a game for a living. But it's just awesome just to be free now and to hopefully get that opportunity and be able to go compete somewhere. And like you said, that's all I've ever wanted. I'm just super excited. Really excited that I get that opportunity now, and I just can't wait to just showcase what I can do and show a team that I can lead a team and win ball games. And so,
right.
Just excited.
I know you've kind of said these things even a year ago when you thought maybe you'd be traded, but just some thoughts, obviously, on your time in Cincinnati. You've made it clear there was no, you were doing what you had to do for you, that it wasn't like a personal thing with the club. But just your thoughts, I guess, now that you know you're not coming back to the Bengals.
Yeah, it was never a personal issue at all. I absolutely loved my time in Cincinnati. Got to start some really key games and had some awesome wins. And just a part of so many awesome just moments being there. It was just a blessing to be drafted there. It really was. As high as, you want to go in the draft and everything, but to fall to a place like that, organization that's just awesome to be a part of, was really a blessing in disguise for me. And I'm just so thankful to Mr. Brown, Katie, Troy, Coach Lewis, all the coaches that were there with me during my time there. It really was an honor to play for that organization, and something that I'll always remember and cherish for the the remainder of my life. And it really is. It's just it was an honor to play for him, and had some made a lot of really good friends while I was there. And definitely gonna miss being there, because our family kind of was established there for so long. With me and Catherine, and then having little man and kind of raising him up there. So it was just, it was just awesome. But we're just so excited for this next chapter and what's in the future for us.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess I'll ask you, because I got you on the phone. Ian, I'm sure maybe heard this from Ty. He put out there you're gonna go visit down in Miami. I'm guessing that's correct.
Am I?
Well, that's what he says. Expected to visit with the Dolphins. So maybe you're learning stuff here now too.
Yeah.
But I guess so. I will.
Miami wouldn't be bad either.
And just finally on that end, I know you. Literally, the league is at your feet here. You get a little bit of time, obviously, before it all begins and all that stuff. Do you have thoughts, or is it really just, hey, let's literally be open to it all, because it's new, and see what's available. You know what I mean? Or do you have some places
we're going to be open to everything.
Yeah.
And I'm not the one, I think you know me well enough, and the people that, you know, will read your article and that truly know me, like, and even my family members know, like, it's not about the money for me. I just love playing football. So I just, making the money's great, but I just want to play. That's what I grew up on. I mean, that's what you're raised on, like here in the South. You're just raised to love football. It's not about money, and so I just want to play.
Right.
I mean, whoever gives me opportunity, I'm not gonna chase the huge contract and being put in a situation that I might not, you know, be 100% comfortable with.
Right.
Just because it's money, a lot more money or whatever, but I want to go somewhere where I can win, and help the team win, and, you know, we have a bright future together. So, I'm just super excited for this next chapter. I mean, it's all so new, and, I just don't know what to expect, but I'm just going to roll with everything and just enjoy it, this whole process, and, I mean, we're just blessed. I'm at a loss for words, but, I'm just so excited.
Anything about that conversation strike you at all, or was it kind of exactly what you expect? I mean, we talked to him enough years leading up to this to know how happy he would be and how he would feel about everything. But anything strike you?
No, I think it was clearly the relief and the happiness in his voice. I mean, you're right. I mean, as he said there, this has never been personal. He's never felt bad about the club, and he was ready to come back in 18 if that was the case, if need be, and see what happens. So I think a guy who's just wanting to play. I think, honestly, probably the interesting thing there, Paul, is him saying, you know, I may not be chasing the biggest payday or the most or a situation that doesn't make him comfortable. And I think that was him. Look, could be wrong. Browns could roll in with a bunch of money. But if the Brown, I don't know if he wants to. I don't know if AJ wants to be Mike Glennon. I'll just say it. I don't think he wants to sign a $32 million 2-year deal. Hey, you're the starter, and then on draft day, hey AJ, sit in the dog pound for the draft, and then oh, by the way, we drafted Josh Rosen number one.
Right. And that's one that you can see coming from a mile away. Right. There's no one out here that thinks that the Browns aren't taking a quarterback at 1 or 4. No right. one. Not a soul. Right. So you know, if you are AJ McCarron, that you're going into a situation where you're going to play with that guy hanging over your shoulder, and you are not in their long-term plans. And this isn't a trade. This is you getting to choose
right
where you go. So I don't know why you would choose outside of, you know, Hugh Jackson, and they probably right. do need somebody right away to go to Cleveland, outside of being your only option, and it won't be his only option.
Right.
Why would you go play somewhere where you know that you're going to have that hanging over you? I mean, right. even if they take Josh Allen, and it's like, okay, well, he's more of a developmental type of guy, and – you know, we're sort of looking at it that way. Even if that's the case, you still don't want to go to Cleveland. You still right. have that hanging over you, and you're still joining a really bad team, and you're going to be judged probably on – you're lucky to get a half a year. You'd be lucky to get a year. You're probably looking at a half a year, you know, on a team that isn't going to win.
Right.
They would need to be winning. You need to Case Keenum this thing. And that's the difference, right? It's – everybody's wondering who AJ McCarron is. Is he Case Keenum or is he Mike Glennon?
Right.
And some team is going to pay a decent amount of money to find out, or at least we think. And certainly the Bengals hope now at this point, because now they're in the comp pick boat right. where they need this to be a big deal to make sure that it lands them a top comp pick, which would be a third round pick in 2019. Right. Assuming he goes for – he'd probably need to go for somewhere in the range of 11 and up, 11 mil right. per year and up to land the third round pick in 19. Otherwise, you maybe start drifting back into the fourth or even the fifth.
Yeah, and that's totally reasonable. Even a team, even if his worst case scenario was as a quote unquote bridge guy in Cleveland, the market is what it is. Like he's getting paid. To me, Paul, he's getting paid at least that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Glennon scared some people. But it's essentially, it was a 1 year, $15 million deal. And frankly, the Bears had to spend it for the cap anyway.
Yeah.
Kind of what you said there about where could he go? This is, I'm going to present the Bengals fan worst nightmare. And frankly, my worst nightmare, on Twitter is AJ McCarron and AJ McCarron guy is going to roll their way to Minnesota to be with Mike Zimmer guy.
Yeah.
What better way to, and if you're AJ, now there's no connection. Zimmer was gone, right? Before. So
yeah, they did not cross paths.
But to me, AJ McCarron fits that mold. I'm sure they love Case Keenum, but look, it's a new OC there. You end up with a new offense. And what better place? Look, I've said this on Twitter, on this podcast so many times, Paul. I think AJ's a good player. He'll be an okay starter, but he needs a lot of help. And what better situation to walk into than turning it around and giving it to Dalvin Cook 20 times, throwing it to Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs and Kyle Rudolph, and you have that revamped offensive line and a defense that's going to give you short fields. I mean, it is the perfect recipe for a guy like AJ McCarron, who I believe is closer to Case Keenum than he is Andy Dalton. And we saw what Case Keenum could do in that situation. I think, Case Keenum might not end up getting $18 million from Arizona for all I know.
Right.
So, or he could be back in Minnesota. But if those dominoes fall, I think that would be like the spot for AJ. If I'm his agent, Todd France, I called, Rick Spielman. I don't know if you can legally at this point, but whatever you do, however that works, that would have been one of the first ones.
No doubt. I'm intrigued by the lack of conversation about the Jaguars going after a Kirk Cousins type or whatever, considering the mess that they're in with Blake Bortles. I would right. think that bringing McCarron in to compete with Bortles would fit well with the Jaguars
yes.
and would certainly fit well and sit well with AJ McCarron. I know that what you can't ask for a better fit and a better place, a game manager type who's not going to turn the ball over and let the defense and the running game do its thing and maybe not have the unreliability and all the picks that Blake Bortles brings with him.
Right.
I would seem to make sense. I would think both sides would get behind something like that. I'm shocked I haven't heard Jacksonville mentioned more in this. There's always been reports floated out there about Miami. Arizona obviously will be in a mix because no one knows what's happening with their quarterback position, which is just what we need. Another former Bengals quarterback under center for the Arizona Cardinals. At least we know how it works and we have our connections there already
right.
To talk about quarterback play. So, yeah, I mean, there's a number of different – I think it's pretty wide open. You have this whole quarterback free agency year that's unlike anything that we've seen with so many names – that are all going to get paid so much. I mean, even Drew Brees, who's probably going to end up with the Saints, but he's out there. You get in with Kirk Cousins, you talk about McCarron, you start going down the line. I mean, after the first wave of Cousins and the Brees, things figure itself out. And then you also have these four top 10 quarterbacks and maybe even a fifth in the first round hanging out there as well. I mean, that is – a lot, and everyone's looking to improve that position where he's going to have options. That's why I think to say, oh, Cleveland, right? I don't buy that. I don't see that as a fit anymore. And for all the reasons that we talked about, because he'll have options. If he didn't have options, yeah, Cleveland would make sense. But I think he will have some options at the very least to come in and do something like a Minnesota where he's competing against Teddy Bridgewater as insurance or Blake Bortles in Jacksonville or any of these types of places where you could see him. It's going to be interesting to see where he ends up, how much people are willing to pay him for that. I'm really intrigued to see how the league actually views him now. And we'll get to learn. We will get to learn how the league actually does view AJ McCarron, not just speculation upon speculation.
Right. Wouldn't it be weird if he has to sign like a 2-year, $10 million deal somewhere and like, you know, have to, I mean, he's okay with competing. That's all he wants. Obviously, he would love to sign the 5-year, $100 million and be the starter and the man. I don't know if that's out there for him, but that would be something, wouldn't it? I mean, it would be a fifth-round comp at best, and it would be the club saying, see? Like, you know.
Right.
So, no, it is interesting. Just the way quarterbacks are. He's got winning tape. It's old tape, but it's, you know, I think he'll do better than that. But you're right, Paul. It will be interesting. Kirk Cousins will set the market or reset it after Jimmy Garoppolo, and then everybody gets paid after that.
Yeah, you go down the line of those with needs. And because some of those with needs are going to realize that they are not going to be able to move up into the top 10 and get a guy that they need. As far as Bengals fallout, you kind of touched on this in BX this weekend. You know, everything we've talked about, and we got into this a lot last week, but Jeff Driskel, you know, eyes sort of turned to him as the backup. I fully expect the team to try to replicate AJ McCarron and use a fourth or fifth round pick or something like that on him. The interesting thing, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but I just want to rehash it now because we did bring it back up in the BX and it's very relevant to the next couple of months. And it takes me back to 2014. And I remember specifically having the conversation the week of the 2014 draft, knowing that they were in the market for a backup quarterback, talking with our columnist Paul Doherty, saying, I think it's important that you come down on day two. That's the day we'll find out how aggressive they are going to be with this backup quarterback situation, knowing that Jimmy Garoppolo would be a guy that would be out there or somebody in that second round. And that philosophy has paid off for New England. You mentioned it in BX. Jacoby Brissett, Garoppolo, and who's the third guy that I'm forgetting right now that I'm blanking on? There's a third guy that they've taken the second or third rounds.
Ryan Mallett.
What's that? Yes, and Ryan Mallett. And they've been able to ship all of them for pretty good hauls. You know, they have tutelage of Tom Brady on the resume. But you can, there's showing the value in that. I think the Bengals maybe learned something from McCarron, and maybe they're more willing to spend a little bit higher pick, knowing A, the importance of the backup quarterback position, and B, hey, maybe he could turn into something. Maybe he could turn into something better than Andy Dalton. Maybe and maybe he will just do like McCarron and look good in spots and become tradable. I don't know, but I think that it's interesting to see. We're kind of going to see that same type thing. How aggressive are the Bengals with the quarterback position, the backup quarterback position in this draft?
Right. I mean, if you look at Andy Dalton and AJ McCarron, you could argue they've drafted quarterbacks way better in rounds 2 through 5 than linebacker, O-line.
Yeah.
D-line, corner. I mean, they didn't draft any corners in rounds 2 through 5, but you know what I mean? Like
Josh Shaw.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Josh is a good Josh. Look, I like Josh. We all like Josh. Maybe they screwed Josh by making him play like 9 positions. But if he's the best player in that draft, look, you know, you're right. Maybe they should look at a QB just because they're like, hey, odds are we'll get a good player because we kind of suck at the rest of this of late. But no,
you're right.
You know, and that's the other thing, Paul, too. With 11 picks this year, you know, whatever free agents they sign, it's the same thing they dealt with last season when they had to cut Jake Elliott, when they had to cut J.J. Thielman, you know, and they kind of got lucky with Shrek and Wilson going on IR or PUP to start the year. They don't have enough bodies. So,
they've got to look at that again. It's got to be the same conversation that we had last year, the possibility of needing to package picks, move up, use certain spots. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Because now, and a lot of that depends on how many people actually leave in free agency. But you're right. That's got to come into consideration as well.
Yeah. Now, you track this a little better than I do at times. People are going to wonder, well, McCarron's leaving, third round comp. This means the Bengals are not now in play for any high price free agent because they would lose the comp. Can you kind of break down how that works, at least for some people? I'll be honest, I can't remember all the time. That works with them signing a big high price free agent versus, you know.
Yeah. I mean, when the list comes out, if they have a player at the same level, priced at the same level, they cancel each other out or near the same level. So, you know, there's that certainly will play into as far as you got to be in the plus. It's really kind of complicated, but basically you have to be on the plus side of you, the guys that you let go different than the guys that you let come in. You want to be on the plus side of that in order to not have it cancel out. So if they lost AJ McCarron and signed a guy who also got an $11 million contract, those guys are going to cancel each other out. And you would wipe out your comp pick. Now, in theory, you're getting somebody who is better than a third round, projected third round pick, a more of an immediate impact guy. And that's how most teams will look at it. The Bengals, of course, are not as interested in that type of thing. So, I don't know how much it will affect it, but it'll play. It will certainly play some. I still expect them to be a little bit more active in the free agent market than they have in the past because that's really the only comp pick that will probably be worth much of anything, barring a surprise, I would say. Barring a surprise Tyler Eifert thing. That would be my only thought on anybody that could really hit a big number out there. Which would be surprising, but it could be like an expensive 1 year prove it or something they could benefit off of. All right, so we've talked about McCarron endlessly again. This is just a trend that continues to go on. Let's discuss Bobby Hart real quick.
Sure.
Yeah, because I know people have been waiting for this. Like people get mad, and I get it. It's like, what? This guy sucks. Why do we have this guy now? He's worse than Obwehi and Fisher. And that's true. And you're right. He was. And he was worse somehow via PFF's tackle rankings. I believe Fisher was 66. Obwehi was 70th. And our boy Bobby Hart, new Bengal, was 74th. The previous year, he got benched for, Bengals fans might remember, Marshall Newhouse in the playoffs. So literally, they went into the playoffs like, we're better off with the Newhouse than we are with Bobby Hart. And then he also goes out where, in a big controversial situation his last year, as he basically asks to get shut down the last week of the season when a new GM, Dave Gettleman, had come in to take over. Dave Gettleman basically is like, oh, time to make a statement. Boom. Good night. And he also gets called out in the media. He was called a cancer through Jeff Schwartz, who is, you know, a former Giant lineman who's in touch with the team there. And it was a whole big mess. And he was let go, and the Bengals swooped to pick him up. He had 21 starts. I mean, and he was drafted in the seventh round out of Florida State. So he'd shown enough to play. But if all you need to know is the last couple of years, there has been sort of like a seesaw between who had the worst line, the Bengals or the Giants. You know, and so plucking from them, the starts don't count for as much when you know it's coming from what their situation was.
Yeah, I think, this shows how weak free agent linemen are altogether. There's Nate Solder, but he's like, okay, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for tackles that are free agents, like, they're not good. it's the same boat this team and other teams were in last offseason when we talked about this. To me, Paul, this is strictly a – he's younger than Cedric Oboehe. He's the same age, I think, as Fisher. He started a lot, has a lot of rehabbed imaging to, or image rehab to do. Last shot in the league? I don't know. Yeah. Marvin Lewis said that with Greg Little back 2 years ago. He's like, hey, if you can't play for me, like, everyone knows you're done.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't – hey, why not, right? I mean, if this dude – I mean, he was calling himself the best tackle in the game.
He was.
at one point. So maybe he's been humbled. Maybe the team is counting on that and seeing, hey, here's a chance to play. Here's a chance to win a job. To me, there's nothing wrong with it. You need 90 guys. And clearly he had enough of something to have played in this league for 3 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can hope that a guy with some measurables can right. be happy with a change of scenery and find right. a little something that maybe you can get. And there's really no, it doesn't hurt you. I mean, there's really no risk in doing it. It's just another guy in there competing. No one's slotting him in as the starting left tackle. You know, there's going to be a lot more moves to happen, but I think they're going to just try to build up a lot of competition, and that's apparent, and they're trying to look anywhere they can, the same way they were looking around for Chris Smith, the same way, you know, that they've looked around and tried to make moves at other positions. You did a whole story documenting that this past year. They try to be as creative as they can and find certain situations where you can hit the high reward, particularly those for very little risk. So this, I think, falls into right. that. I would not expect much more than that, though. Because he was bad. That's all I can really say about it.
And I think and this kind of can transition us a little bit into the next topic here, and we hit on it a little bit with that McCarron trade-off thing, Bengal fan getting mad because they don't, you know, drop $90 million on some dude that they know. You know, I think the Hart type of signing, I think that, Paul, like that sort of second wave free agent class, again, is where this team is going to be looking for, right? I mean, I'm sure they're never really in play for that. They want to sign Atkins and Dunlap, which is, you know, they're going to have to push that money from somewhere. So I don't know. Who is there anyone that you've kind of looked at very early look here before roster cuts, although a couple of those have come out that are like, okay, kind of middle tier, maybe just above Bobby Hart, who was waived because, you know, you didn't want to play, to below, you know, Ryan Jensen. You know what I mean? It's a big window.
So you mentioned Ryan Jensen, so I didn't know if we were going to be able to include – if you want me to include him. I've been sort of on the record about that, I feel like that's a great fit. Knows the division, veteran center. They need to go veteran at that position. They need to move on from Russell Bodine just to find something new. I like Ryan. Of the second wave, Jensen, I feel like he's the best fit and the best type of guy that they should go for. In my opinion, you know, or, you know, that's where I would start. I look at somebody. I think we mentioned him also in one of our stories, Avery Williamson, the linebacker out of Tennessee, who's really shown that he can do a lot, good against the run, but pretty good in coverage, kind of a do-it-all type of linebacker guy that could be a nice fit. I like, you know, those are two guys that stick out for me that could be nice little fits. And hey, you know what? If they want to do a splash, I'm going to give you a bargain splash here that they won't do, but I'm going to throw it out here just to give a little shock to where I think you could. And maybe they say they're just bringing on the same problem. What about Jimmy Graham? Is he basically Tyler Eifert part two, but older?
Yeah.
31.
He's older, that's for sure.
You know, and he's. could you get him at a bargain? Because people are seeing the age now. They've seen the beat up guy. They've seen maybe a slight depreciation of some of his production. But how much that had to do with Seattle and their system, it was very different. If you could get a season or two at a decent price out of Jimmy Graham with a little bit more reliability, not a bunch, but a little bit more reliability than Tyler Eifert, if he survived through to the second wave, which I don't necessarily think will happen, but if he did, you know, I think that's something I would consider. I think that they will. I don't think it's on their radar. But when I think about what they need, that is the type of player that I do think that they need, that could help them. Red zone threat, they've proven that when they're how different their offense has been with that. If they're not willing to go give reliability to Tyler Eifert, look, Jimmy Graham has played 16 games in four of the last five seasons. Okay? This is not Tyler Eifert, even in an older age.
Yep.
So it's worth – if you could get a decent deal on him, I'm just throwing that one out there.
Well, you and I are – I can't – I guess for me, I think they'd sign Eifert before entertaining the quote-unquote premier tight end on the market. But you and I are thinking along the same lines. I think second tier, there always seems to be a connection of some kind, whether it's their draft board like Kevin Minter or a coach or someone who feels good about a guy in their unrestricted dealings. And maybe, and I don't know this because I know he was an underachiever in Green Bay. So, but Alex Van Pelt might have a lot to say about Richard Rodgers, a third round pick from the Packers in 14. He was supposed to be, I was there for his rookie year, Paul. He was supposed to be the replacement for JerMichael Finley. You know, Finley was this big, dynamic receiver. You know, his career ended early with the neck injury. And it just never happened for Rodgers. You know, some hands issues, obviously not good with Aaron Rodgers. You got to catch the ball. But, you know, 4 years, he's played 16 games. All 4 years, last year he played in 15. Packers fans right remember him for catching the Hail Mary against Detroit. Role has been reduced. I mean, the Packers look to move on the last 2 years with Jared Cook and then Martellus Bennett, clearly phasing out of their operation there. So, you know, again, change of scenery. Maybe Van Pelt's got a good report on him, or they think, you know, Jonathan Hayes getting him in a room, a different vibe could work. So, you and I are thinking the same ways with tight end there, Paul. One, I'll throw out there. I'm curious your thoughts on this. And maybe it's too soon, a year after Joe Mixon and Adam Jones. Alden Smith might be reinstated in March.
Mm.
He hasn't played in a long time.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a – he's had his issues. We know but again, he hasn't played since 15. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they would entertain. They clearly are not afraid to entertain such things. You know,
right.
We know that. It would just it would play right into the hands yeah, of fans. But you know, you're right. I mean, if you're looking to get some value at and a guy who was a high, they love guys that were high picks previously that flamed out elsewhere, thinking that they can get them in a different system will help bring that talent out, or whatever could help fix them. And obviously Marvin Lewis has a history with all this type of thing. That's an interesting thought. That's an interesting thought. And I could see, I absolutely could see them having a conversation about it for sure.
Yeah. Cause at this point, what is it? 1 year, what veteran minimum is what, 500 grand,
mm-hmm.
600. I mean, right. It's like the Bobby Hart deal. For camp.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm just curious about it. Cause maybe not even as a signing, as a clandestine tryout. What does he look like? Is he still in shape? Does he still want to play? Has he been sober? Is he allowed, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
The important things, obviously, for his life, if the guy is even capable. But it crossed my mind just because of, again, this I'm going to hammer it home, and I've been telling people for a month, and they're going to hate it, but this whole win now attitude and, like, you know, guys like that, 42 sacks in 43 games when his stuff was right.
Right.
You know what I mean? And maybe his stuff can be right for 20 snaps. I don't know.
That's an interesting thought. I definitely see them entertaining it, especially if they're going to be getting him at a very low risk cost. You know, where you can get him in your system in through the off season, so you can really know by the time you get to camp how he's doing with his personal stuff, right, and where he's at with all that, and then see how much you're willing to go forward at that point. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. It certainly wouldn't shock when you consider the recent history even of those are right. Finding ways to take chances on those types of guys, betting on maturity happening at some point. That's an interesting one. All right. Good. Good. We'll get more into that, of course, as we get closer next week. We'll be going up to the combine. So we'll have all your stuff from up there. We'll record. It'll be a pre-combine BBP. So we'll have that, and then we'll have full combine reaction and lots of interviews with players and coaches and all kinds of stuff from the combine next week in Indianapolis. That's really when the full off season gets cranking. The coaches have been taking a couple of weeks off, and this is kind of a dead period for the most part. The Bengals are the rarity. I think on NFL Live, they were talking about AJ McCarron for about 2.5 straight days just because they had nothing else. This is just a weird news blip in the middle of this dead period where people are mostly just making stuff up. So, you finally start to really get some action with the combine. And then, of course, we'll be diving headfirst into free agency at that point. So we have a lot more on a lot of this stuff coming at you. Also, a good chance to remind you how delicious 50 West beer is. If you have not been to the Kroger's in the Cincinnati area and seen them, you're missing out. They have their stands and caps, the logo. They're now in stores, which is awesome. Optimistic Bobby has done a great job with getting their three cans out there. Coast to Coast, which is their IPA. Doom Pedal, which is a crowd favorite, and their American Lager. A lot of beers not willing to go into the lager world, but 50 West is. They have a delicious one. So you can pick up one of those three in stores now, in cans, or, of course, you can always go down to 50 West and fill up your growler at their production works, which we had the live BBP at earlier this year. Get hooked up down there, eat some delicious food. But just remember, 50 West, how good they are. They're out there, and go get you some good beer. Drink those Coast to Coast. That is my stuff. All right, so let's move forward. Power ranking time. It's power rankings are inherently stupid, so we like to power rank stupid things to point this out. And so, you know, there's a new show coming out, Unsolved. Yes. It's on USA Network, and it is about a topic that we often joke about on here, and that is Tupac conspiracy theories. So it's all about the unsolved murders of Notorious B.I.G. and Tupac. They'll dive into it. So there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there. People are talking about Puff Daddy, about Suge Knight, talking about the Crips. It was the Bloods and Crips. Tupac's alive. Talk about Machiavelli fake death stuff. Biggie took him out. I mean, there's so much stuff out there. So we are going to power rank our top two, bottom two favorite conspiracy theories that are out there.
Yes.
So you ready?
Dude,
are you ready for power ranking? This is your wheelhouse.
Honestly, if I had another job, it would only, like, if I had to leave sports journalism, I would be a Tupac murder, like, person. whatever that means.
You would have done that. You would have done the Unsolved documentary. It would be a Jim Ozarski
joint. I'd be like all over this thing. I'd be living in Vegas, going back and forth. Oh yeah. Tracking down 30-year-old sources and all that stuff. Yeah. So I love this stuff. I mean, partly because it is entertainment. I mean, obviously, Unsolved Murder is not. And I'm sure everyone knows at this point is my favorite hip hop artist of all time. Love that man. But yes, I do have some favorites, and my favorite conspiracy theory my second favorite, because I was so excited, Paul, I was gonna give you my number one. Are we doing top or bottom real quick?
I'll start
with number two. And number two favorite conspiracy theory is that Suge Knight set this up for him to be shot at as well as Tupac in close vicinity and set up that murder. That is my second favorite conspiracy theory, because it's technically absurd.
You believe that to be – you think there's some truth?
Well, no. First of all, zero truth. But it is my second favorite one, because it's like that makes no sense on so many levels. I get mad about it. I'm like, the dude was shot in the head himself. Like from close range, like six rounds, multiple rounds. A clip is going in the car from like 2 feet away. Like, no, you are not. If you are trying to get a person killed, and hey, look, Suge, much love, safe out there, like rolling. Like, hey, I love you, brother, but I'm sure he knows how to get somebody killed, and he would not do it having someone like sitting right next to the guy.
Right next to him and shoot also in his direction. Right. No, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
That's my second favorite one, because it's so absurd.
Okay. What's your first?
That he's alive. That's what I like. He is so not alive. He is so not chilling in Cuba with Asada. Like, as much as we'd love it, that's not true. He's not like on an alien planet. Or chilling in like Amsterdam on the lung machine, just like getting free weed. Nah, he's rest his soul. It needs to be at rest. That is my favorite conspiracy theory, Paul. And I know you and I disagree on this, but he's not alive. He did not fake his own death.
In response to that, here's my number two. My number two, he faked his death. Number one, he's alive. Okay, I'm going with both. That's number two. First of all, he did the whole Machiavelli album. There's so many. He signs all over. He's showing up in YouTube videos, just walking the streets of New York. I've seen it. Okay. How often do you have to rap about faking your own death and like people thinking that you're dead when you're not? You name yourself Machiavelli. I mean, how many times do you have to leave signs out there? And then all of a sudden, you wind up dead and no one can solve anything. No one knows how is this unsolved? I don't understand. We break down everything on every show and nobody knows what happened here. That's because people were paid off and the whole LAPD and the Las Vegas PD and everybody's been paid off to stay away from this and let Tupac live it up in Cuba and get away from the superstar life. And just relax with all of his money, writing songs. He's probably wrote like half the jingles on commercials that you've heard now, but you just don't know that. I'm telling you, he's so alive. This has totally all been fake. Suge Knight even said, look, he said in a recent interview, I don't know. I walked out. He was doing good. There's no way that he just would have turned that fast, because he didn't. Because he dipped out through like a hospital trap door. And he's totally alive and just like hanging out in Cuba, drinking Mai Tais right now, listening to the BBP. Big Bengals fan.
Well, if he was alive, I wish he would listen to this podcast for whatever reason. I can't get there. I have my reasons for that. We don't need to get too far down the wormhole of he was a social warrior, my social justice warrior, in my opinion, and I don't think we've gotten this long in our history without hearing from him. Let's put it that way. But I do have a couple my worst power rankings of conspiracy theories. Number two is, and it's so, it's not the worst, but it's second worst, because I just, and Paul, I just heard it, and that's why I can't remember this rapper's name, because there was some other competing Tupac, Who Killed Tupac show going up against this USA Network thing. It was an A&E sort of true crime thing, and this guy's trying to track down stuff. And basically, there's a theory out there that some rapper, and I'm not even going to throw his name out there, because A, I can't remember, but B, it's so ridiculous, killed Tupac because Tupac stole the lyrics to Brenda's Got a Baby. I was like, I heard that and I almost fell out of my chair. I'm like, how? Like, I understand there's like bots and Russian bots and alien bots and whatever out in the internet nowadays. But how that even started was so absurd. That's my second least favorite conspiracy theory. Tupac stole Brenda's Got a Baby when he was like 19 with like Digital Underground. Like, come on. So that, and then number one least favorite conspiracy theory, similar topics, was somehow Snoop Dogg could have prevented all this, because Snoop has popularized gangster rap. We all know Snoop, the flag, the colors he wears, the Crips out in Los Angeles or California, Long Beach, that somehow Mighty Snoop could have prevented all of this from happening through some, you know, whatever. That drifts into some territories of just unrealistic stuff. And you're going to put that on a guy, So to me, those are my two least favorite conspiracy theories of how we got to this point 30 years later of an unsolved murder. 20 years.
All right. Those are the, I like that. I will say my number two is, this is not my favorite. Basically, I'm just looking for excitement out of these theories, right? Like, I don't really care what truth level there is. And so, like, the whole, oh, it was just another gangbang, Orlando Anderson and the Crips, like, we're just trying to go. That's not very exciting. Like, it's just another gangbanger death. And if it was really just a Bloods Crips type thing that took Tupac from us, I'd be so mad, you know?
Yeah.
Like, come on. I'm not even – and number one, least favorite, I don't like that people think Biggie did this. That dude was not about that life. That dude – really. I mean, I understand everyone's like, what? He raps about guns and stuff all the-. Look, he was not about killing Tupac, okay? He was trying to get away from all that stuff, first of all. And it's just like the whole beef was so played out of control – That is not anything happening. When it gets brought up as a thing that could have happened, only makes me mad. You know what I'm saying? It just makes me mad, because I feel like it tarnishes like Biggie's legacy too. And you know, I love Biggie, so I don't like that either. So that's my power rank. Power rankings complete. Wipe that off my hands. We're feeling good. And all we know, what did we learn today on the BBP? Tupac is so alive. He's so alive. There's no doubt about it. There is no doubt about it.
Get at us on this one. Come on, Twitter. Come on, Facebook.
Forward us links to the best theories that you have out there. Let us know your favorite Tupac conspiracy theories. We want to hear them. And, and tell us what you think about Unsolved, too. I'm curious to see what people think about that. All right. I know that you're mad about something. I got inside info. I got a good feeling. I know where you're going with this one.
Yeah.
Tell them why you're mad.
This is not the Yaris. I'm going to put it up front. Yaris is a tank, and this would never happen with the one hub cab Yaris. So the other vehicle, which we have had issues with these many years, driving around again today, Paul, and just stops in traffic. All these lights come on out of nowhere, and – it stops, just dies, turns off. 4-lane road. I don't understand how. Look, machines are machines. Cars are cars. We do our best to take care of them. Look, they're going to break. That is what it is. I don't – what it infuriates me, Paul, because this is the second time this has happened with this car. Different problem, but same result. And that same result is stop. Doesn't matter. Light comes on. What does this light mean? I don't know. Could it mean A, B, C, D, Z? But it just turns off as you're driving. If you are driving the car and it just turns off, that's what happens. How is that even a thing?
No, that should not be a thing. That's very dangerous. Yes.
And there's the whole personal safety issue aside, but like it infuriates me that this car's in 2012. This is not some like 1970s thing, some 80s thing, some 90s thing that we're keeping alive. This was like done recently on purpose. Oh, and again, we've had this issue before. So thankfully for me, when I saw these lights come on, I almost wanted to get a dump button ready. Like I kind of knew what was about to happen. So I was able to get myself safely. But the first time I had no clue. And you still don't know when the car is going to turn off, right?
No.
So
yeah, you don't want to be driving and like think, hey, the car could turn off at any point. That would, you know, and have to be always ready for that.
Oh my God. What is that Kramer where he's got like the Novocaine? He's like, I let the expletive fly. Like, oh my God. It was just a stream of consciousness. I should have recorded it. It was like Christmas Story, like when he says like my dad could swear like a thing of beauty is like poetry.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
It was like a poetry slam for a mile and a half, 1.8 miles. Thankfully that's all it was to the, you know, place and we're getting looked at. But oh my God, Paul.
Oh, that's excellent. That is excellent. I would have definitely paid for that audio and we would have played that audio. It would have been before the McCarran audio today. I can tell you that much. And without a doubt. All right, let me tell you why I'm happy. You know, I'm happy. I get happy about the remnants of a really good party to like kind of make you remember. My favorite thing about New Orleans this weekend, we landed on Thursday and that Mardi Gras obviously had finished up Tuesday. They had what they call Trash Wednesday on Wednesday where they clean up the entire city. It's like the most efficient thing you've ever seen as far as cleaning up a party, all the streets. It's amazing how they do it supposedly. Anyway, Thursday, we're driving, going down this going out towards Magazine Street, which is a little outside of the French Quarter, stuff like that. And the trees, this was the parade route, all the trees were all just covered in beads. And
that's fun.
Crepe paper and all. And it looked like those were – like it was, a Spanish moss or something coming off of it, except in bead form, in party form. And I mean, this was throughout the parade route because everybody had just, and supposedly this was as much as had ever been in the trees they'd ever seen. And it was just covered beads hanging from trees. And I just love the concept where if you didn't know better, you would say, I think something pretty cool happened here a couple of days ago. Yeah. And it looks great. I'm like, man, they should almost do that all year round. They should just have bead trees because it looked awesome. It looked like it made you remember how much fun was clearly had here a couple of days prior. So I enjoy party residuals that end up, you know, it's kind of reminding you of being very cool. So I enjoyed – that was probably one of my favorite parts of New Orleans this weekend. And what a good time that was.
Underrated element of that happiness, Paul, I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you're watching other people clean it up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if I was cleaning it up, that would not be cool. No. If I knew that one stiff breeze and all of that stuff would fall into the ground and it would be my responsibility, I would not – no, that would be a bad – I would be very mad about that. But I could just sit there and watch somebody else have to go get it. Yeah. And that'd be great. So that's – I don't know how we keep doing this.
I know.
We keep having nothing – saying we really don't have anything to talk about and – having longer podcasts than we do during the season. What is wrong with us?
Well, we like conspiracy theories and
we do.
You know, it's just good stuff.
It is. And I think maybe in season we just have other stuff to get to, so we make sure we don't spend an hour plus talking about God knows what. Hey, good for you guys, the listener, possibly.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out.
For those of you that stick around, so we appreciate that. Thanks again to 50 West. Make sure you pick up some of their Coast to Coast or Doom Pedal or their American Lager in stores now in cans. And thanks to them for all they do and Optimistic Bobby does for us in fueling the BBP. All right, so next week, again, we mentioned it, Combine is going on. So we will be up in Indianapolis talking to all the draft prospects, and we'll get a lot of conversations with some of the new coaches and coordinators and Marvin Lewis and Duke Tobin and all the Bengals' main players you'll be hearing from next week. So keep an eye out for that, and we'll have more BBP action. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and Tupac's alive. Talk to you later. All right. That's a delight.
Too funny.